Yeah, this podcast is all that you get. Josh and Antonio might be it, but heaven knows they'll try.
A Ted Lasso podcast on post-show recaps. You better believe it. Welcome to our Ted Lasso talk. I'm Josh Wigler. I'm joined here, as always, by a man who's never going to give you up, never going to let you down, Antonio Mazzaro.
I'm never going to run around and hurt. Definitely not going to do any of that stuff.
No. I will desert you, as in, like, I will make desserts and I will bring them to you.
Oh, nice. What are you making?
I'm probably going to make some sort of gravity-defying cake.
Be careful. We're just going to end up talking about the bake-off instead of Ted Lasso.
Gravity-defying biscuits for the boss.
Yeah, how about a cannon that's sitting on top of, like, fondant that's sitting on top of, like, two mounds of flour?
I'm going to make a gravity-defying cake that is Danny Rojas kicking a soccer ball upside down, and the soccer ball at the top of the cake is the cake.
And Danny Rojas will be wearing pink slippers.
Yes. Oh, poor Danny Rojas. I really felt for him. As somebody who, Antonio, in the past year and a half, getting close to 2 years, has put on closed toe shoes, probably double digits, and that's it. Like, probably, like, I feel like I am overshooting it by saying, like, I have put on closed toe shoes 20 times. I think I'm going over. Man, he had my heart. He really did. He really did this week. Poor Danny.
I have put on closed-toed shoes a lot more than that, but I've only put on, like, these kind of non-trainers shoes, maybe, like, two or three times, and yeah, absolutely brutal. It just reminded me, like, why did we ever do this? Why is a society, agreed?
What do we get to keep from this, right? Yeah. Like, what do we, like, what improvements do we get to take from this? There should be, like, we should be able to glean some improvements from this nightmare time, and I think that should be, like, the no wide acceptance of the death of dress shoes.
Yes. Flats
and
only.
Uncomfortable shoes for everybody. Yes. We should get them out. Get them out of there.
Yep.
No expectations for your feet. Your feet, you do whatever you want.
Let's not go that far here.
That's too liberal for you? Okay,
there are some people out there, you say, feet, do whatever you want, and we're going to end up in a world that we do not want to... We're going to want COVID back, right?
Well, like, speaking
not
of...
that it's gone.
Speaking of feet, we are talking about 6 Feet Under, not the TV show, but we are talking about a funeral this week on Ted Lasso, which much of the episode circles around. We are talking about Rebecca's father passing away and the funeral that follows that creates a lot of different stories for the various cast members. Obviously, a lot going on with Rebecca and Sam, and specifically the end of that relationship, at least for now. The reintroduction, or at least the confirmation of a love triangle with Keeley and Roy and Jamie. And I don't know that you can hear my eyes rolling as I'm saying those words, but they're rolling. They're rolling. Obviously, a lot more about Ted and what happened with his father and Ted's memories of all of that, and his increasing therapeutic relationship with Sharon. And then the big one is Danny Rojas' feet. and of course, what's going on with Nate and that very provocative Nate and Rupert scene that I think caught a lot of people's attention, certainly the people who are, like, really watching the show closely. So just overall, just a ton going on this week, Antonio.
Definitely. We had mentioned, I think it was, I don't remember if it was Joe Kelly or Brendan Hunt, but their statement about some of these episodes that were added is they happen between when the shit's going down and when it's about to go down. And clearly it's about to go down and it's going down. Like, clearly things are happening here. Big things are happening. I mean, we spent at least this season, if not some elements of last, with Rebecca's relationship issues and where they would end up. And we know they ended up with Sam, and to have that ending, at least in the way that it has so far, is a big deal, obviously. Finding out specifically everything that happened with Ted and his father, knowing the real grisly details of that, even though it was presented in such a way that we were spared some of them, I think, and some of the emotion was shared with Rebecca, the way that scene was edited. Still significant revelations there. Only a couple episodes left in the season. Josh, the other thing is the team's record posted very clearly in the background at the beginning when they're all in Ted's office talking about death. And there are only two games remaining to play in this season for AFC Richmond, and they are in a great spot. So we'll definitely talk about that as well.
Yeah, they're coming back. But of course, they're in a great spot because I don't know that this is the place to start, but we're just on the topic. Clearly, Rupert's given up his shares.
Yeah.
He's washing his hands clean. Yeah.
We're never going to see him again.
Of AFC Richmond. So his storyline is done.
He's forever. Done. Never in the show again.
And I think when he got together with Nate at the end of the funeral and he's whispering to Nate, I think what he's whispering to Nate is like, goodbye, old sport. Never going to see me again.
Yep, I'm done.
And you and I are definitely not going to be working together for some totally different rival football club by the end of the season.
Right. I'm definitely not going to buy Manchester City, the great enemy of AFC Richmond.
I'm definitely not inviting you to be a part of the coaching staff.
Definitely not.
That's exactly what's going to happen, though.
It seems like it. I don't know about the Man City element.
Some version of this is where we're going.
Some version of it. If you want to start there, we can start there. It's Rebecca noticed it, so there's at least some element of this is not going to sneak up on anybody, but who knows where Rebecca's head's going to be at.
It'll sneak up on Ted.
She's clearly dealing with a lot of... And it's going to really sneak up on Ted, because as we see Ted getting ready in his house, listening to Easy Lover, which he had mentioned in episode 5 when he was late getting down to talk to Coach Beard because his alarm didn't wake him up, and he said, that's how long it should take a man to get dressed. Ted's got the picture that Nate signed of Ted and Nate, the gift that was given to him by Nate, right next to the picture of Henry on his dresser at home. So this is something very important to Ted, whether we've recognized that or realized that through Ted's actions this season or not. Like, it's definitely going to sneak up on Ted. I still feel like Rupert is so scummy that there's some version of this that also burns Nate in the process, right? Like, he's going to get Nate to expose all the club secrets and, you know, really do bad. And then he's just going to leave Nate. He's not going to really have any use for him. Like, there's a version of that story where Nate's kind of all alone and comes back to Richmond because Rupert has used him and thrown him away, like Rupert tends to do. So any aspect of it is bad. There's no way that Rupert does something magnanimous and just gives his shares away. Clearly, that's to position himself to buy some other club. Or Bex to buy some other club, however it is. And it's really probably just to spite Richmond. That just seems like where it's going. And it sucks. It sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think that there's even like too much to discuss about it other than to clock it.
Yeah. Other than we'll talk about that a lot more in season 3.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in more detail when it inevitably happens in the next 2 episodes.
Yep.
Just putting that right out there. I mean, got to start on a depressing note, right? Because this is like something of a depressing episode that is attacking that stuff in Ted Lasso fashion. So I think like trying to really find like that, like, you know, that beaming light of humanity in it, like allowing room for anger and sadness, but also forgiveness and self-acceptance and self-appreciation and community and all of those things that the show does so well, I think do collide at this at the funeral that the episode is sort of like structured around.
You said community. The team is kind of like a study group, I guess.
Yes, in a sense, in a
manner of speaking. Who is the Jeff Winger of Ted Lasso?
Oh, who's the Jeff Winger of Ted Lasso?
Yeah.
This is tough. It doesn't really map, does it?
No. Maybe he's some kind of obnoxious. Yeah, like maybe it's Jamie Tart. And Jamie Tart is getting up to some real antics in this episode that have drawn the ire of many.
I think there's an argument that Jamie Tart is Troy.
Yeah, that's a very good argument, actually. I'm persuaded. I don't even need to hear the argument. You're right.
I think Roy Kent could be conceived as a Jeff Winger type. If you're talking just about the people who play the sport or played the sport, I think when you start to open it up, I think that Ted Lasso is clearly the dean.
Yeah. I like Higgins as the dean as well.
Higgins as the dean is pretty good.
This is really taking this podcast into niche territory. Yeah, perhaps we should save this.
All right, let's back off. Yeah, I'm just going to tiptoe with my bare feet.
Tell you where this would go over real well, Josh, is in the post-show recaps patron Discord.
Yeah, it would. I'm not going to bombard you with the, hey, it's the 1 year anniversary of the Post Show Recaps Patreon program on October 1st, and we're really psyched about a lot of the cool things that we're going to be doing all month long, and you should check that out at patreon.com/postshowrecaps, or you should check that out at patreon.com/postshowrecaps on October 1st. I'm not going to bombard you with that.
Okay.
I'm just going to say that, and then we'll move on.
Yeah. But because of the community building podcast at Post Show Recaps, there's definitely some shared DNA there. So we can get into that. But I don't know. Higgins is maybe too pure for community. Higgins' version of the afterlife, Josh, is worshiping at the feet of his cat. Like, how much more pure can you get?
I mean, I know when we lost our cats in the last few years before we got the new guard, there was definitely like, am I going to see you again, little buddy?
Oh my gosh.
And if Pardo could talk, he'd be like, no.
This guy, Pardo has the Roy Kent view.
Yeah. And not because I won't be there, but because I will not be seeing you, sir. My life will have moved on without you.
All cats go to heaven. All wigglers. Oh my God. We don't know.
We don't know where I go. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
No, the Cindy Crawford calls are always going to make me very, very happy on this show.
That's aimed specifically at you. But
it for sure is.
The juxtaposition of Higgins wanting to be a cat that would basically just worship at the feet of another cat, and Nate wanting to be a tiger so he could kill people who look at him wrong. Like, those two things are pretty opposite in terms of why one would want to be a cat. But I guess everybody wants to be a cat, and that's why everybody wants to be a cat.
Cool cat, at the very least. So it's a big episode, lots of different storylines. Is there one, now that we've gotten the Nate and Rupert stuff out of the way, that you really want to begin with? Do you want to do bigger picture? Like, how did the episode overall land for you, Antonio?
I thought it was great. My main takeaway from the episode is that they'll win all the Emmys again. We didn't talk about this yet on this podcast.
No, but we didn't. We recorded it right before the Emmys.
We did. We were in the green room. I mean, we were recording in the Emmy green room in that tiny-ass, like, indoor, that was supposed to be outdoor tent situation.
Because what we haven't disclosed is that we're just on the payroll.
Yeah.
And we've been hired to just, like, prop up the show.
Yeah, right.
Because there's all this season two backlash, so they need us to come out here every week. And be like, the show is excellent still, and you guys are wrong.
But
we're doing that for Apple money.
Yes.
But no, we missed
it. Which we used to buy apples.
Yeah, green apples.
Yes.
But we missed this. We finished recording and then, like, shipped out the podcast, and then the podcast is in production at that point, in post-production at that point. We're like, oh yeah, shit, the Emmys. So congratulations to everybody on Ted Lasso for the most part. Jason Sudeikis, Hannah Waddingham, Brett Goldstein, the writing, I think, the writing went to Hacks, actually, if I'm not mistaken. But a lot of Emmy love for Ted Lasso for season one. And so you think that this is the episode for you that, like, solidifies that Ted Lasso season two is going to receive an equal amount of Emmy love?
Definitely for the acting performances of Hannah Waddingham and Jason Sudeikis. I think this is the episode they would submit, I would assume. I mean, I don't know, but it's a tour de force in terms of the acting levels for both of them. The central scene that links their stories together. And I don't know about you, but I did read that scene as them suggesting at a minimum that both of their traumas date back to a Friday the 13th. I'm not sure, because of the way the scene was intercut, that it was exactly the same year, but Rebecca starts the story by talking about it was Friday the 13th, and Ted says it as well, and said they were going to have a Jason movie marathon. So that's what you do on Friday the 13th. So it's definitely at least the same date, whether or not it's the same year. They have this connection, and they were divorced on the same date as well. Like, not the same year again, but the same date. She's doing the anniversary of her divorce when he's filing his divorce papers. Like, this is the thing. They are inextricably linked in a lot of these ways, and ways that they don't always necessarily even realize. And so for that reason, and for the reason of the way that it sort of shared their pain, I really liked the way that this episode intercut their drama in the main moment. But I know that that's a divisive moment of the episode. How did you feel about the intercutting of the stories of Rebecca finding her father cheating and Ted finding his father deceased?
There are ways in which I think I would prefer those conversations to be done separately from each other. because I think they're obviously such foundational moments for each character. And we've at least been waiting 2 weeks to learn more about what happened with Ted and get to that moment of him saying to Sharon, one of my favorite lines of the episode, of like, I'll tell you anything. I'll tell you everything. I'll tell you anything you want. You know, when they're about to sit down, he's like, I'm ready to like just like do this whole thing.
Because she said she hated tea. Like it played so funny to me when he said that for that reason.
Yes. It's like, now I know I can trust you.
Yes.
Is really, really good. So I wish that there are ways in which I wish that we had just gotten that straight. That we had just gotten it totally straight. And for Rebecca as well. There's obviously like a big crux for her as a character. Like you know, it was obviously, I think, probably pretty foundational for her marriage and, you know, her feelings towards marriage and her feelings towards towards romance and like what all of this, like a messed up relationship for sure. And like the anger that she has at her mother as well. Like, I thought all of that felt very real and very raw, and the kinds of things that like, even when you are like, you know, late in life and like you are like firmly an adult, right? Like you're firmly ensconced in adulthood and you are still so angry about what your parents did. Like that all played really, really true. And I would have loved that stuff to have played separately for the character specifically. But I also think that you bring up a really good point in the ways in which like those events may share some like actual like connectivity of like a Friday the 13th and these like horrible discoveries that happen for these two people who like really should not and frankly would not know each other if not for their pain. If not for their pain, these two never would have met.
Exactly.
Exactly. Know, if not for these things that happened to them and happened in their lives, they never would have ever found each other, because Ted, you know, goes all in on like making sure that nobody never stops believing in themselves, making sure that nobody ever quits. No quitting. And gets into, you know, coaching professional sports. You know, Rebecca finds herself in the position that she finds herself with so much like spite and rage, and I'll do anything to hurt this man, which is at least an echo of her relationship with her father, and hires Ted. And so without these events are very, very much linked fundamentally to the core. And what does it say about like those two characters and their journeys together as the show progresses is, you know, up for, you know, your interpretation, like the royal your interpretation. But I think for me, like no matter what, like these are the two central pillars of this show. We love Roy Kent, Jamie Tart's great, all these characters are great and important and matter and make Ted Lasso work. But Ted Lasso is like foundationally about Ted Lasso, and I think like just a scooch underneath that is it's about Rebecca,
right?
And I feel like having these stories happen simultaneously, like it's not a coincidence too that like a lot of Ted's panic attack journey, you see Rebecca either like directly involved with or remarking upon and like observing directly.
Yep.
So I think that like the intercut nature of the scene may be a little bit jarring, and even with all of this being said, still may not be my preference, but I also think it's really true to sort of the fabric they're trying to weave.
I think you've said a lot of really good stuff there. In terms of like, there's also just the logistics of like, this is Ted Lasso, the show. So it will always, it's going to lean in on the emotional aspects of these things. Like, we're going to have Ted having a panic attack while Let It Go is being performed in Liverpool in season one. Like, we're going to have these moments of high emotional success or pleasure or high emotional depression or failure. I don't want to make it seem like depression is a failure in any stretch, but we're going to have highs and lows on this series. And I think the key for Ted Lasso is to balance those out. I think it does it so well. And I think making sure the high highs are never too high and the low lows are never too low. I mean, when they score the goal at the end of the first season, and the high is so high, and then Jamie Tart, of all people, gets the ball back in play and gets the goal set up and they get relegated. It's like, just these wild swings. But they're always intercut or undercut. I mean, when we have Ted really breaking down, we have the great moment of levity where he says to Dr. Sharon, are you going to charge me for this session? And he said, of course. And it's like, well, I appreciate your integrity. Like, that's very funny. He also makes the joke about, I don't know if it's appropriate to ask you this, but can I have a hug, please? Like, those are moments to take away the sting of the pain. But I think the inner cutting also, while it does deliver on the emotion, because you don't linger with Ted in that moment, because we don't cut away from him, because we are cutting away from him, I think we're removed from some of the really deep, deep, deep darkness that could emerge from that scene. So I think it also serves the function of putting the pain at center stage, but spreading it out and making it shared in that way. So it doesn't really drain you too much one way or the other. So there's that aspect of it too. Your mileage may vary, as you're saying, like it, there are people that could prefer it another way, and I'm not going to disagree with them. For me, I will say it worked for the reasons you said. Their pain is not just their pain, right? Like the decisions they make as a result of it affect other people. This is the way pain works, right? We've said it on this podcast and it's said in the world, hurt people. And this is, so their pain has been shared by others in their lives. It makes sense that as they're sharing it, in these key moments, it would be shared, with us. Like it's shared, it's collective. Like this is pain that does not just affect them. It affects others around them. So putting it together like that, I think really also serves to show that, that it isn't just that these two are linked, which it also, of course, shows, as you're saying, it shows, I think, that this pain is something that is shared by everybody. And as a result, because as you're saying, it causes them to make the decisions they've made in their lives. It causes them to behave the way they've behaved in their lives. It really, like maybe in the case of Rebecca, I mean, we know that she went with Rupert and she left everything behind. She cut everybody out. She cut Sassy out. She cut Nora out. Like this was her life. And maybe that was because of everything that happened with her father. Maybe she felt like you have to be devoted to your relationship and nothing else, because I know what the flip of that is. And she overcorrected and went too far. Like, this is shared pain. Like, this is pain that has affected everyone around them. And so I do think it adds up that it would be shared in this way on the show. Having it link to a specific date in their lives in this way, it's not an accident, right? The writers didn't just throw a dart at a dartboard and hit Friday the 13th for both of them. Like, that was a clear choice. And I think it was a clear choice for the reasons that you've said, because these inciting incidents from them brought them to each other. It brings them closer together, literally and figuratively. So showing that play out this way on the screen and having it happen at the same time as Rebecca is coming clean, Ted is coming clean, I think it speaks to some sort of cosmic connection between the two of them. That is something that transcends like the typical will they or won't they relationship dynamic. It transcends like whether we would even want that or need that. These two people are linked in a deep, significant way that they don't even necessarily realize. And I think every chance the show gets to show us, the viewers, that I think will only serve to strengthen whatever happens between the two of them. And we could talk about that in the context of Rebecca and her relationships, because this is a character, Josh, and I think we really should put a lot of this center stage at this point. Ted Lasso season 2 has done a lot of great things, but one of the things that I think people have rightly pointed some criticism at, and a lot of the criticism has been completely ill-timed, stupid, I would say just stupid and unfair, but I think it's exceptionally fair to say Rebecca, the character, this is a character who, for better or worse, in the context of the show, most of what has happened with her has been about her romantic relationships.
Yeah, basically all season long.
All season long, and a lot of what happened in season one. And so putting that, if that's what you've got with Rebecca, I think it's exceptionally important that we mark this Ted relationship with Rebecca as something separate and apart from that. Like we talked earlier in this season, Do we need it to happen? Do we not need it to happen? I don't even care about that. What I care about is how deeply these two are bonded and why. I really hope it doesn't end up that they get together, but it's important that this relationship exists in a world that isn't that. I think it's important for both characters, but especially Rebecca.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think I hate even having the conversation, because I think like there is still a world in which this happens someday.
Of course.
You know, like I think like you could see it. It's muddy, right? Because like not only are we having like the Rebecca and Sam relationship and where that goes from here, who the heck knows, but we also have Ted and Sassy now are definitely becoming something of a thing.
Yeah, it's a repeat. They've gone back and now they've revisited it, so that's a thing.
Yeah, that's fine. Look, if that means more Sassy on the show, I'm happy.
No one is going to complain about that.
I'm not complaining
about
that.
Maybe Rupert.
If it means more Sassy and if it means more Nora on the show, then like, yeah, I'm shipping this until the cows come home. And they're overdue. Like they stayed out way long.
And I don't mean to interrupt, but let me just say, speaking of the cows coming home, I think we have to couch all of where we could go with Ted and Rebecca and who, whether we should care about, by saying, I feel like the ultimate end for Ted Lasso, the character, is the cow coming home. Like, he's got to go back to Henry. He's got to go back to the States. Like, we heard his pain about the fact that he was mad at his father for working all the time and being away, and taking that as a rejection, a reflection of a rejection of him or something. That caused anger for Ted before his father ever did what he did. And look at what Ted is doing to Henry. He's away. Like, he's not present. So I feel like the end for the character Ted Lasso, the natural end that makes sense and is going to bring the most like warm-heartedness, is Ted goes back to America. I don't see Rebecca going with him. So why bother going there with these characters? They need to just be supportive of each other and love each other as friends and be that. I don't think we need to go any further if Ted's going to go back to the U.S. anyway.
I totally agree, and I really hope they don't go there. I see the path, and I hope they don't walk down it. I think that the story is so much stronger with the two of them as friends.
Yep.
And I'm concerned because I do think that, like, to your point about Rebecca, and now we're getting into it with Keely too. It's just it's so much about like all of like the main women characters on the show are just like totally defined by the relationships that they have with the male characters on the show. Yep. Like this reintroduction, if we want, I mean, it's a reintroduction. And like a confirmation that this is what's been happening every time Jamie said, Kille, you know, like he has professed his love for her. And then there's things that seem to be like a little rocky between her and Roy. And she seems really taken aback by Jamie's vulnerability, but then also by Roy. So like we're doing this and like this is the most interesting story you have about Keely. What are you talking about? Like this stuff really bothers me. And I'm like concerned that like the show is not going to be able to write Rebecca as a character without like romantically tying her to Ted at some point. You know what I mean? Like I'm nervous about that.
I think the nerves are very well founded for the reasons that you said.
They're like rooted in reality. Her entire storyline this season has been about I'm looking for love. And you're totally right that last season her entire storyline is about I'm looking for revenge against the person who I loved. Yep. And like that worked as like the catalyst for the show, but was there not like a different direction to go in season two, you know, or at least like add some stuff too, like so that it's not just entirely about that.
I will say some of this, and I think it's both for Rebecca and Keely. I mean, it obviously it all is a clear choice by the people that are writing the show, but I think some of it is a clear choice that they made not to focus on the nitty gritty, kind of maybe boring, a little bit like obtuse or like just out there business aspects of running a club in the championship. As I've talked about on the podcast throughout, like we have not seen the aspects of what happens to clubs when they're relegated financially. We have not seen the hits. We have not seen the parachute payments or talked about like how the English football pyramid or the football association is like set up to try to help those clubs, but what happens to those clubs when it goes down. Like we've not seen any of that, but it had in the small ways that we have, right? Where it comes to like banter as a sponsor, or where it comes to like Dubai Air as a sponsor, or Rebecca being the OG boss ass bitch. That is not Rebecca doing anything romantically. It's Rebecca standing up to the patriarchy or to the good old boys club that run all this shit, putting her fist in the air and saying, no way, I'm standing up. And she's not doing it because she loves Sam in that moment. She's not doing it because she loves Ted. She's not even doing it because she hates Rupert, really. Like, she's doing it because she's a BAB. And that's a story about Rebecca being an executive, like being the person in charge, running shit and saying, I don't care about the consequences of this. Principles are correct. Like, it has nothing to do with relationships. So that's an example of something that's in here that they did that doesn't have to do with that. Great. Like, had we really delved into the business aspects of it all, we could have had a lot more story for Keely. But Keely's constantly popping up talking about this sponsorship opportunity or this Nespresso machine or this particular thing or that or the other. And she does that, but it's usually
like things that she has participated in, things that she has brought in, things that she has done, but we as an audience don't get invited into seeing the work.
Right. It's done as a punchline. It's done as to have Beard and Roy growl at her when she's asking for somebody. It's done to have her kind of put down Nate and say, coffee's for closers only, Nate. Like we all, you know, it's done for those reasons. It's not done to show her competency or her being her excelling at her job. Like, we know she's good at her job, and we have seen some elements of that, but we just have not really seen the real connection to the story. But one thing I will say, this is a show about relationships, like romantic, platonic, whatever they are. That's what it's a workplace comedy. Soccer's the milieu, but it is about relationships, like all these shows are. Like, that's what this show is about. And so, of course, romantic relationships are going to be part of it. And of course, non-romantic relationships are going to be part of it. The Diamond Dogs or whoever are usually meeting about relationships, but the connections of the team, the bonded nature of the team, the relationships, that's all of what's here. And I definitely think they could have done, and they can do, a much better job with Keely and Rebecca, because Keely and Rebecca's relationship is fantastic. And it isn't always about men, but it is often about men. And I think that's the part where it's like, if there were more business storylines, then it could be more about business and it could be more about excelling in that realm and less maybe about just comparing notes about how men are. And Keely's constantly pushing Rebecca sexually and about relationships. Like, as great as their relationship is, like, that is the number one aspect of it. And that's the part that I think is a little bit like, well, I know it's a show about relationships. I know these two female characters have a fantastic relationship, but at the end of the day, what are they talking about? And I definitely think that's something that the show could be focusing more on, some of these other things, but it's a show about relationships. So I don't know ultimately how much further we could get without changing the show completely.
I hate the Keely Jamie Roy storyline.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
Really don't like it. It's making me uncomfortable and anxious in a way that I don't want to be uncomfortable and anxious. And I also think we've been here. Why are we doing this again?
I don't know. I will say it makes sense for Jamie, as sad as it may be. Like, I do understand why a guy who is sort of on this recovery path and really growing as a person. And the reasons he said, like, it reminds me of all the things that you thought I could be, that I'm becoming them. Like,
the thing I appreciated the most when he's like, this is such a shitty thing to do. Yes. Like, thank you. Yes. Because it is. Yeah,
it is. And Andrew Lincoln never had that on a sign in Love Actually, but it's the same shit, right?
Yeah. Like, he should have written in one of those post boards, like, this is such a shitty thing to do. I want to start this off by saying this is an extremely shitty thing to do.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And at least acknowledge it.
At least acknowledge it. And so that is growth for Jamie. And I understand, I mean, he's coming from a place of vulnerability, which we know is a big trigger for Keely. And it is something that Keely always finds very powerful for Roy and in others. That vulnerability is really freaking her out right now. Jamie doesn't have any cats. She likes that. This is definitely something that that feels connected to their relationship. It feels correct for Jamie Tart to be feeling this way. I don't hate it on that level because I understand it on that level. The level that I hate it on is the level where Sexy Christmas had to be postponed, and we saw that as some kind of building block, or, you know, a stumbling block, I should say, for Keely and Roy, or all these little things, these, I don't even want to call them microaggressions, but like the micro, just the way that there's micro conflict between the two of them that has sort of felt manufactured throughout, and it's like over in one episode, and it's like, sorry, I was a dick, Keely, like, and that's where we're at. Now, all of a sudden, all that stuff feels like it's stacked up on top of this, and it feels like, oh no, they didn't actually resolve it. Those were all things that sat with Keely. And so then when Roy was being awkward about death because he doesn't like it, because he was sad about when his grandpa died, and he still hasn't really processed that, his relationship with the afterlife, like, now all of a sudden I'm supposed to feel like that is a barrier for Roy and Keely, and that they could break up because of all these things that felt like they were resolved. I don't like that. And I just, Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not that, but it just feels like, well, what else are they doing? Like, they don't have any other storylines for these people. Like, this is what they've been doing with them. So Jamie at least has his dad to deal with, but Keely and Roy only have Keely and Roy, and that's really kind of it. So I don't know. I don't feel good about it either. Don't feel good about it either.
Nervous about where it's going. I'll also say that, like, I think, like, there's certainly, like, directions where, like, and the show has zigged where I thought it was going to zag so many times that I'm just like, I'm still just open for the ride, and like, I won't like make like a final like, this is how I totally feel about it ruling until season two at least is over.
Yeah.
But I'll say that, like, what you just pointed out, like, this is why, like, I'm like team Sudeikis. Like, you've got three seasons of story in mind, call it, you know, like, that sounds right to me. Like, if we're already, like, you know, recircling the drain to a certain degree on some of these storylines, like, then, like, maybe there's like reason for that, because there is like a tight arc in mind as it like specifically pertains to like these people and their relationships with each other, and that could be great. Like, that could work out in like a really, really nicely written, emotionally powerful way. But if like the other thing is that, like, Ted Lasso will go on forever, and here we are in season two already getting back into the Roy and Jamie and Keely love triangle, like, yikes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yep. I think like that story energy, like, just like the, like got to pull over and fuel back up, you know, gas station's just on the left.
It really does make sense for me for Jamie, though. Like,
it does. And I hear that too, for
the
sure.
The Keely and Roy stuff does not feel like it has landed for the reasons that I said, but the Jamie stuff, it makes sense as part of what he's going through. But maybe, like you said, hopefully the zig and the zag and, you know, all of that, hopefully that means that Keely and Roy, I mean, I feel like my energy in that moment was like, oh shit, Roy is going to propose at this fucking funeral. Like,
yeah.
Why is this going to happen? Like, this is a lot, but
Roy Kent, like, is a sick person though. like, Roy Kent is a psycho, eating that apple like ways, a psycho.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Read the room, guy. Like, you can feel how you want to feel about death, but clearly Keely's not picking up on what you're putting down. You got that signal boosted up the wazoo. You had all four bars on your 5G blaring when you were back at the house, and she made it clear she did not like what you were talking about as it pertains to death and funerals. And then you show up at the funeral with, what was that, a Red Delicious apple? Yeah. So let's put a pin in that, you sick person.
Yeah, he stopped by Delicious Orchards on the way.
Of all the choices in the world, and that's where you're going. Get that scoop, and that's straight off the craft services table from the Ted Lasso production. And then you show up eating on that and saying it was the fruit of a dead tree, that you're eating somebody to death taste. Like, you sicko. Roy Kent, I love you, man, but that was some messed up stuff.
It was a little gallows humor,
a little too gallows,
and like, honestly, on, you know, on one level, like, everything else that went down at that funeral, with talking about all the various and sundry relationships, or all the vicar telling people to keep their voices down, whatever it is,
funny.
Like, it wasn't exactly the most demure, reserved, quiet, like, deferential, a celebration, if you will. It was not a, stiff upper lip moment. Like, everybody was getting into the sacramental, and having a good time. So Roy making some gallows humor jokes didn't necessarily not fit with the way that everyone else was behaving in the moment, but, it certainly was not reading the room in Reed Keeley. And, you know, she left that scene saying, like, I'm upset. She left the scene at the house.
That's saying, what I'm upset.
And then Roy said, well, I'm sad. And then this is how he responded to it. That's him trying to laugh away the sadness. That's him joking through the pain. And, you know, I don't know where Keeley's at. Like, clearly Jamie's vulnerability and him throwing her all that at her feet, and then her basically turning around and having Roy do a similar thing, but different. It's rough, man. Like, that is so rough. That is so rough to have that have happened the way it did. But obviously setting up the finale, hopefully it's just, you know, Roy and Keely get engaged, or Roy and Keely are on good terms and nothing happens. But I don't know. It also didn't feel like a piece with where we left Roy and Jamie with the big hug after James Tart did what he did before Beard went on his odyssey. It felt like there was maybe not a lot of build or carry over from that. Jamie didn't really address that except to say he was sorry about doing it. But it's definitely a thing. It's definitely a thing that we're going to have to deal with for the next two episodes at least, Josh.
Yeah, we'll watch it. So Rebecca and Sam are no longer together. We like see them as a couple in this episode, potentially for the last time. Who knows? It is like the look at how happy they are, and now they are not together by the end of it. He's too wonderful. He only gets more wonderful was a cute line. What do you think about the fact that this relationship just like flash in the pan is done? And what do you think this is saying about the show moving forward? Is this Rebecca being like, yeah, I can't be like attached to all this stuff anymore?
No, I mean, it was Rebecca saying like, you're too wonderful, which is like the worst reason to not want to do this relationship. Like, I understand it's a good, vulnerable character reason. Like, it makes sense on some level, on the level where Rebecca gives the Amy Mann speech at the beginning of this season to John Wings Knight. And basically says, like, I deserve exposing myself to someone, and not in a literal way, in an emotional way, exposing myself to someone, knowing that I could get hurt, but deserving someone wonderful. Like, you can't think about where this ends without thinking about where this season began for Rebecca, which is another way of us saying, like, yes, this whole season has been about her relationships. So, but I think it is inextricably linked to her epiphany there in that moment. This feels like a different epiphany. Her epiphany is that she's too scared of that pain, and she needs to figure out why, and she needs to process why that the Sam stuff is making her jittery, because it feels too good. And maybe it's not too good. Maybe it's just that it is good. But it feels too good because, you know, when you're in a desert, an oasis looks like, you know, all the water you'll ever need. So maybe it's just that she was in so need of being treated well that when she got treated well, she looked past a lot of the other things about this relationship that were being smokescreened ultimately by how wonderful Sam is. And some of that stuff I think would have made sense to talk about here. The stuff that we talked about in the past when it's come up, but we have not really leaned in on the level of discomfort or the level of grossness or the level of inappropriateness, the power dynamics between Rebecca and Sam.
Yeah, she's really at the top put on of the center club. Stage. He's yep. an employee.
Yep, yep, yep. And, you know, if the roles were reversed and Sam Obasanya was the director of AFC Richmond or the owner, and AFC Richmond were a ladies club, and this is what was happening, this is not a positive thing. This is a disgusting thing. This is a gross thing. So why is it not that the power is the power, and the power dynamics, I mean, it normalizes them, right? And it normalizes them in a way where it's like, oh yeah, this is cool. This is good. Like, it's okay if both people are into it. Like, it's still not okay. And Rebecca didn't talk about any of that. I still like to believe that the wonderfulness of Sam was covering up the fact that she should have not ignored all of those caution signs, that she should not have blown through the stoplights, that the fact that she was desperate for a wonderful, kind human connection with someone, and she formed that with Sam on Banter, was enough for her to let her guard down and say, this is all I should pursue, when in reality, there's so many reasons not to. That is something Rebecca should ponder. Like, that is something like, why did I look past all of these things that were my natural instincts? Because in the moment when they match, her natural instinct is like, absolutely not. This is wrong. Right. I've been like turning you out, essentially.
I've been grooming you. Yeah. What she said.
Yeah. Not turning you out. That's a different thing. But, you know, that was her natural instinct, and she blew past that because they do have a natural good connection. So it makes sense to me that when she's given a time to step back and really think about the seriousness of life, she might think like, I need to think about why my pursuit of something wonderful is what led me down to this path that ended in this closet. Like, I need to think about why that is the case. And is it because I'm worried about getting hurt? Is it because those are all aspects of this, but there's a lot here that I haven't processed. So I need to take a step back and process it. In my world, Josh, when she does that, this cannot continue. Even though I like these characters so much, and I feel so bad for Sam, and I don't have a good solution for him, frankly. Like, this is going to hurt. It's going to hurt.
It's going to hurt, but Sam Obasanya is a champion, and yeah. I feel good about his ability to like maturely and like emotionally intelligently handle a breakup and like you know, have a good life. Like, I feel like, too. You know, like, I feel like this does not have to, like, you know, like a beautiful time together doesn't have to, like, you know, when it's over, doesn't have to, like, define that time. You know what I mean? Like, right. I think there are ways to, like, healthily move forward and like integrate the experiences and cherish those memories and still be good. And I feel like Sam strikes me as a character. That line, "I'd only get more wonderful," it, like, really speaks to that vibe to me of like, He's going to be okay.
I'm
like,
going to be good no matter what, and I'm actually only going to get better. So, you know,
I hope it's a little bit
bravado because we see Rebecca's mom say, you know, "I saw him walking out of the closet looking pretty upset."
Yeah, he's going to be bummed.
He's going to be bummed, and I know it's a sitcom at the end of the day, even though it's turning into a 1-hour show with these 42-minute episodes. But I think this one was even longer. But you know, in the sitcom world, the way that Sam gets better is he gets another relationship. And I don't need that. Don't want it. We're probably guilty of it too. I'm guilty of it with regard to Miss Bowen. Like, I want to see Phoebe's teacher on the show more. And so,
well, you know, because there's a very easy answer for that.
Because of the way the show does this shit, absolutely, that's what first pops into my mind, right? And so it's like, I don't feel like I want to need that for Sam, but I also feel like the show is, you know, the kind of, the show could deliver that. So it's like, well, I'm immediately like looking around and saying, what's next? Because that's what I worry we're going to end up with for either of these characters. And I don't think we need to do that, but this is a show where saying that would probably lead you to the answer. So I'm okay with all those aspects of it. I'm glad it's gone. I'll tell you what my biggest fear is. My biggest fear isn't that they'll get back together. My biggest fear isn't that, that Sam will end up in a bad place. My biggest fear is that the reason that it happened was for narrative purposes, and that the narrative purposes are that it will be exposed in the tabloids, that it will cause them both drama that they don't want or need, that it will bring a hex onto AFC Richmond. My belief is that based on where the record is right now, they're in great stead to get promoted. They may not, with the points total they could end with the end of the season, get automatically promoted back up to the championship or to the Premier League. I'm sorry. The points total they have right now is 82 points after 44 matches. They have 2 matches remaining. That means they can get a total of 6 points. That would take them to 88. 88 would be on the low end of the automatic qualifiers, but it would certainly be in line with enough points to automatically qualify for promotion. But more likely, with 2 episodes left, as we've been tracking, where their points totals are going to send them is into the playoffs, where the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th place teams in the championship will participate in a playoff, the winner of which will get promoted as the 3rd team to go up. So they're in a good stead to be promoted for that. My belief, the way that season 1 ends, of course, is we have the high of them scoring the goal that's going to save their season, then the rug's ripped out from under them by them getting relegated, and so that's where we're ending season 2. I believe season 2, that's where begins season 2. I believe season 2 is probably going to end with them getting promoted, and then the rug getting pulled out from under them with all of their chickens coming home to roost, vis-a-vis the drama with Nate, vis-a-vis Sam and Rebecca. All of this stuff is the stuff that's going to be the dark end of the season. Like, even though we can take the club's football fortunes and put them in a good spot, the way to take the air out of that success is this failure. And I worry that the Rebecca and Sam stuff happened backwards, that it was something that they wanted to add to the drama of the end of the season. And so this is why it happened. That's my biggest concern, is that it will come out in that way, in a negative way. And that's where it will get exposed. I mean, obviously the show, as you said, they zig when we think they're going to zag. So I'm not saying that I believe this will happen. That's my greatest concern, though. My great concern is that that's where this is headed. They will win, but the way that you end the season on a mixed note, which Ted Lasso has proved that they can do, is you win with cost. You win with consequences, and the consequences and cost will probably be something involving Nate and Nate exposing all this stuff. So far, the Sam and Rebecca stuff is quiet, but it feels like it's going to get out. I just don't know how.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about like the tabloid angles.
And Rupert has so many connections at those tabloids. You know, like, if Rupert has some grand plan
I was going to say, is he planning some sort of like Benjamin Linus masterstroke type, "I always have a plan"
exactly.
thing?
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Like, you know, is there something going on there?
Get out your gas masks, everybody.
I had this as you were talking, I had I was struck by a vision of the future, of a possible future.
Oh, I like this. Tell me more, Desmond.
Is there a world where Rebecca has to step down, but Rupert's already gone, and could the next evolution of Ted Lasso going into season 3 be Ted owning the club or something like that, Rebecca passing it, does she pass her shares on to somebody else? Do we see a reshuffling of the deck in that way of fish out of water, now really big fish, bigger pond type deal? I don't know. Something like that. It's just sort of the images that flashed.
AFC Higgins?
Yeah,
AFC
Higgsman? Yes, that's what I really want. this whole show to end with Higgins in the power seat is probably where it ought to be. He should be on the Iron Throne.
Earl Grey is replaced by Cindy Clawford.
Uh-huh.
Greyhound, sorry. Yes. Earl Grey, that's a different thing. That's a hot paper bag water.
That's the garbage water.
Yes, exactly. That's pigeon sweat.
That Jean-Luc loves so much. I don't know.
There is a world where Rebecca does feel like maybe she steps aside for the good of the team. I mean, there are 2 episodes left. That's plenty of real estate for a lot of this stuff to happen. It's been said it's the Empire Strikes Back season. The monologue from Ted in the ROM communism statement in earlier in this season in episode 5 again was him basically saying the dark forest is in the middle, but everything will work out in the end. I promise you that. It does feel like the show has told us, there's going to be some darkness here, but it will be fine. And we've gone through some of the darkness, but I think there's too much with Nate. I mean, Nate is literally Nate the Gray now, both in suit and in hair. So it just feels like we're going to get a different version of the guy. I will say my interpretation of the scene with Nate and Rupert, not to move on from the, Rebecca and Sam of it all. We can definitely reconnect it.
I don't know how much there is to go.
If you want to say anything, feel free. But my interpretation of that was, if you look at the way Nick Mohammed plays the scene, he is surprised that Rupert is talking to him at all. Yeah. And he walks away looking like a man who just got complimented by Rupert Mannion. He's impressed with himself. So that wasn't, I don't think that, I think that was probably the first real interaction between the two of them. But it does feel like Rupert is probably recognizing that Nate can be plucked, and whether that's plucked and used, or whether that's plucked and used for his football mind, or whether it's plucked and used for a weapon against the team, just indirectly, I don't know. But it felt like their first meeting, and it felt like Rupert was really just paying him a compliment and saying that FA Cup match, I know that was you, that was brilliant, mate. You're the only football brain around this team. That could be what he said, and that was it. But that's the beginning of something, not the end of it.
I think that's right. I think that is for sure correct. I think as far as Rebecca goes, the big thing to discuss that we have not yet discussed is the Rickroll.
Ted Lasso just fully Rickrolling everyone repeatedly. And Rick Astley, just being a huge part of Ted Lasso, apparently a massive Ted Lasso fan. He tweeted what is, I just think, the most wholesome, cute, kind, nice video of how sweetly impressed he was by that song. He said, that's what he refers to it as, that song. That's just another song for Rick Astley, or how he would like us to believe. But the fact is that he was so impressed by the fact that that was there, and he felt so moved by it. And Hannah Waddingham DM'd him afterwards. Lord knows what went down in those DMs. But Rick Astley, a big fan of the fact that the Never Gonna Give You Up was on there. And obviously making jokes about the fact that people have long thought that Rick Astley was black, the people that aren't familiar with the video. For some people, this was a wake-up call that Rick Astley himself is British. A thing that people don't realize. So I just think a really, yet again, the show taking music and putting it center stage. But how do you feel, Josh, about the singing of it in the church? I know in the moment that felt like maybe a little gilding the lily to you with regard to having Hannah Waddingham singing yet again on the show.
I'm realizing that did I wake up on the wrong side of the bed? I liked this episode of Ted Lasso. Is it my favorite episode of Ted Lasso? No, definitely not. But I really enjoyed a lot of it. But here I am just being like, I don't like this. I don't like that either. That thing over there didn't like that. And I'm just, I'll just be the Grouch today. Like, it felt like it was in here because they know Hannah Waddingham can sing and they want to give Hannah Waddingham more like singing scenes. And like, it was the same thing for Christmas, but it's Christmas and it's low stakes and that's fine. But like this like big emotional moment that just turns into the Rickroll and then everybody in the church singing the Rickroll. Like, I must just be like this, like in like this monster cynic mode. I don't know, Antonio, but it didn't do it for me. I recognize and want to give voice to the fact that I am in a smallest sliver percentage wise of people who probably feel that way. But I didn't love it. I didn't love it. It just made me feel grumpy, grouchy. I was like, you're just doing this because she could sing so well. This is the only reason why this is in the episode. I know that you have tried to talk me down, and I think that you have good perspective on it.
It's going to happen again. You just have to steel yourself for the fact that Hannah Waddingham's going to sing probably three more times in this series.
For sure. And maybe I got to get right with that. That's on me. Like, I have to get good. I totally understand this as a personal
failing.
How many
times
did
Mouse Rat play on Parks and Rec? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like,
they weren't that good. You know?
100%. I have to, but like, it's a crowd pleaser. I just have to get good. I got to get good. I'm working on it, folks. I'm working on it.
Well, and I just thought it was Ted Lasso being Ted Lasso, the show, in terms of like finding a way to take something that is a joke and making it have emotional resonance, but then also making it funny again and striking all those emotive notes at the same time. Hannah Waddingham, so great at her performance, like the way that the song choked her up. I think that it was an act of love for her to sing it in some respects, an act of love for her mother.
Yes, that was the perspective you offered me that I thought was very, very good.
Right. And that's the part where it's like, okay, this is an awkward episode for a lot of reasons for that their relationship. But her saying, like, I hated you for that and I hate you for that. And her mom saying, well, I'll take hate over indifference all day long. And her mom saying that song just makes her happy. And, you know, why shouldn't you try to be happy every day? It's a perspective, maybe not the most helpful perspective for some, but it is a perspective. And then so when she's so desperate and in that moment and searching for anything to say positive and has really nothing to say positive, she pivots back to mom. And there's power in that for me, for sure. And that is ultimately, even though at the end of the day, a huge part of their difficulty in their relationship is because of a man, that is ultimately, I think, the power of their relationship and the way the episode ends with the two of them in bed and the song coming back. I thought really good. Like, I really liked this episode on that level, on the level of showing Rebecca and her mother's relationship and trying to repair some there. I don't know what Ted's relationship with his mom is like. I don't know how they process that. We don't know much there. But what we do know is that is a major part of why Ted was so mad at his dad. Ted is always quick to point out it wasn't just Ted who was affected by this. It was Ted's mom too.
It was very hard on me and my mom, he said.
Yep. And my mom.
And the mom was like an emphasis. Like, it was very hard on me and my mom.
And my mom. Yep. He points this out. He did that to his family. He did that to me and my mom. Like, it isn't just in this episode where he does that. So that relationship is there. We don't know. It seems like Ted has taken a lot of the anger at the situation out on himself for basically saying, like, I should have told him more that I thought he was a good dad. I should have showed him I loved him more. And maybe if I did, he wouldn't have done what he did.
Yeah, it's horrible.
That's what Ted's been carrying with him. And I understand that. Like, and I, you know, it is horrible. But it seems like Rebecca's emotion about the great divide or the great inciting incident with her mom, and she's not taking it all out on herself. She's taking it out on others around her mainly, and it has in fact affected her relationships with other people for certain. But the most central and important one is her relationship with her mother. So it felt very restorative and reparative to have her sing the song the way that she sang it and the reason that she did. In that moment, it also, not for nothing, when we talk about the intercutting and interconnectedness of it all, that's when Ted shows up when she needs it most. And Ted is there to pick her up when she can't even say goodbye, right? Because it's too emotional for her in that moment. It is Ted that picks her up. So I think they get a lot of juice out of it, even though I agree with you, it's totally manufactured to put her in that realm where she's the one singing again. I think they get a lot of juice out of it with her, with two relationships that don't have a lot to do with her romantic connections. Her relationship with Ted and her relationship with her mom are both really served by how that was done. I thought it really worked for me in that way. But I definitely understand. You're a person, I think, Josh.
I knew that Ted was going to start singing, and then I knew everyone went. I was like, honestly,
you knew it was coming.
If I'm being completely honest,
this is a safe space. No one's listening.
I'm going to put my cards.
Several thousand people are listening.
I'll put my cards fully on the table for the thousand people listening.
More than a thousand, for sure.
For the few thousand people listening.
More than a few thousand. Let's just go ahead.
For the million people. All right. I knew it was happening, and the second Ted started singing, I just kept hitting skip forward 10 seconds, skip forward 10 seconds, and like, okay, I got it. They're singing.
Yeah, yep.
And
yep.
Until it was safe. So that was my experience of it. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. It's a me thing. It's on me.
You are a person who I think, and this is like, I don't think I had heard the term navel gazing until I heard it from you. I would have been a little more Midwestern and a little less refined and say that this shows up its own ass. But you call it navel gazing, and I know that that's a term that's out there in the world for this sort of thing. I don't think you like it when shows like are smelling their own farts, if you will, enjoying their product and enjoying the things that they've put on display.
I don't know. I think that you should take pride in your work for sure, right? And like, I think that like your show can express that in a big, big way. But I do think that I am noticing this pattern with myself of like, I think like there's like a line between like call back and then like over the line fan service, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I don't know that I always have a good pulse, like my fingers on the pulse.
The chorus of Trent Crim, The Independent, at the beginning of this season, which they only did the one time, felt very much like that.
Yes. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
And I think that stuff is just for whatever reason, like some people, cilantro tastes like soap, you know, like this tastes like soap to me.
Can you imagine if you could hit skip 15 when you were eating like a burrito bowl or salsa or something that had cilantro in it that you didn't want, unwanted cilantro?
I like cilantro, so I wouldn't want to skip.
You wouldn't want to do that, but for the soapers out there, they definitely would. Can we call them soapers?
I don't know if you want to call them that. That feels slightly offensive, at least.
All right, the cilantro tastes like soap crowd.
But look, if you loved it, that's great.
Yeah.
I'm the Grinch. I recognize this.
I neither loved nor felt cynical about it. Because I am the way I am sometimes, I really just started thinking about, okay, this works. Like, you know, I'm okay with this on a productive level. Like this is output that serves character, emotion, story. I feel okay about it.
I like it a lot more when I get to talk to you about it, Antonio, and I won't engage it again.
That's good. That's fine. That's all you need to worry about.
Like,
that's
now I like the scene, but I'll never watch it.
Yeah, good. You don't have to. And I don't. I mean, I got to admit, like the third time I watched this episode, and earlier I rewatched some of episode 5. You know, I'm pulling back to it because of the connections from this episode. I skipped through a lot. I'm just like, you know what? I don't need to see this scene at this point. Like, I'm good. Like, I don't really need to see this particular moment of this episode. I don't think it added much. It was just there for comedy. Like, it's fine. It is whatever it is. So I don't have a problem with that at all. Like, that's ultimately what this scene was. Like, it was a great performance by Hannah Waddingham. It was a chance for her to sing again. It was a moment for Ted to support her in the moment when she needed it most. And it was a moment of community, which the show is all about, community building moment. So there it was, and that it was just, it was done. And it was buried like a fruit tree, and we don't have to think about it again. There were some other things though in this episode. We talked about how much we love Sassy, but how about Sassy's dressing down of Rupert?
Marvelous.
Incredible. She hates him so much. Like, does she just hate him?
Telling this man that I cannot wait for your funeral to his face.
I count the days.
Just absolutely wild.
And like, what is he doing? Like, why is he even bothering trying to approach her? Like, this is a no-fly zone, brother.
I don't know. He's just like, I think that when you are that awful and that powerful, you just like don't even think about that. I think you think that you can walk into any situation and have total absolute control over it without even like possibly like contemplating that someone may have the temerity to read you for filth.
And then when they do, just walk away from it. Like, okay, yeah, you're fine. Like, I'm not going to mess around here anymore. Like, Rupert is a little bit of a tiger in that way. And it's funny that Nate wants to be a tiger because Nate in this episode, the fact that he is, you know, the fact that Rupert is the one who reaches out to Nate, like Nate will be very receptive of the wing of a dragon kind of pitch. You know what I mean? Like Nate's going to be very receptive and find it warm under there because he, Rupert in some ways, I think is the way Nate wants to be. He's famous. He can just pull women from any corner of any room that he walks into. Like this is Nate's dream. And even if it's to be cussed out by someone like Sassy, Nate's the kind of guy that will just walk that off. So, I think Nate and Rupert together do unfortunately make some sense. And in this episode, we have the moment where Nate shows up in the suit, Josh. He shows up in the Ted Lasso suit, the suit that Ted bought for him, because Nate was wearing his dad's suit in the For the Children episode in season one, and it was too big. And Nate's and Ted's like, we're going to make a pit stop and take care of you. Ted buys him this suit. Nate wears the suit. It's his power suit. It's clearly his only suit. But I think it speaks to what a dickhead and how disrespectful Nate can be of other human beings. Because you could rent and or buy an appropriate suit. Every single guy in this team who doesn't even know what fucking dress shoes are, Josh, was able to get in a suit and that was appropriate and get in shoes that was appropriate. Only Nate, the asshole, decides to show up in this color. And I think it's purposeful. I think it speaks to what kind of a dickhead he is on the inside. Yes, I understand why. But you don't do this. Like, you can go rent a suit and be like everyone else in the club. He's a little bit of a dickhead.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's definitely like, he is buying his own hype in a really big way right now.
Yeah.
Like, he is like, no one is as big a fan of Nate the Great, the Wonder Kid, as Nate the Great, the Wonder Kid right now.
Yeah.
And like, I think that like,
not a kid with that gray hair, Nate.
I don't think that that like makes him to his core an asshole necessarily. I think that there is a lot of unnurtured stuff there.
Sure.
That has contributed to him, like once he gets a taste of this, wielding it poorly. And I think that he has not done anything so filthy, awful yet that he couldn't like with true like contrition and like actual effort and emotional, you know, effort, like pull some of that back. Do work to like, if not like make that stuff right, then at least be better moving forward. But he's being groomed by Palpatine right now.
Yeah.
You know, like he's about to tell us how much he hates sand.
Did Rupert whisper in his ear, did I ever tell you the story of Darth Plagueis the Wise or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are not going to map Ted Lasso characters onto prequel characters.
I don't think that's happening yet.
Again, though, postshowrecaps.com/patron.
Yeah, that will get you there. but yeah, I feel like a lot of what's going on with Nate. Like I do think it'll have a happy ending eventually. I just think it'll take a while to get there, and it will be getting darker before it gets any brighter. And I think that like the suit is ultimately like a relatively innocuous thing, in my opinion anyway. But I think that it speaks to the larger issue of what's going on with this guy. He's assumed an avatar, you know? He's playing a character.
The fact that everyone on the club that we had great jokes about how they didn't even understand that dress shoes were different to sneakers, right? Like you don't have to line up overnight and get special releases. Zero, hilariously, bright red Yeezys. Like these guys don't know what's appropriate. Isaac, the great captain, whips them all into line. They all show up fine. They're miserable, even in Danny Rojas's case, showing up in
the contrast is very, very sharp.
Yep, it's clear. It's clear. That Nate could not
like
be
what
bothered.
People are willing to go to like be there for their teammate. You know, and Rebecca is like very, very clear in terms of like the personal discomfort that some of these people allowed themselves versus what Nate allowed for himself.
And can't help Jan Moss out there just stirring the pot. Maybe he is working for the Empire as well, because he says, isn't it infantilizing to have another man pick out your clothes or whatever, like a grown man pick out your clothes or buy your clothes for you? And Nate's like, well, no, because most of my clothes my mom buys for me. And then he does that thing where he says something awkward and he walks away from the scene because he knows it's awkward. Like, this is his, like, yeah, this is absolutely all of his, his like Anakin moments. Like, this is what's leading him to turn. Like, we're seeing it happen in real time. but it is fertile ground, let's say. And I understand that you're saying the ground is unnurtured, and I agree with that, but the unnurturing has made it fertile for dicks to grow, and Nate for is sure. a dickhead.
Yeah.
The tree that's growing out of him is producing dead fruit, and I, you know, where it ends, we speculate, but it's not good, and it's a small thing, but one of the things I think is that when we binge seasons one and two, knowing where Nate's story ends up, wherever it ends up in season two, at the end of it, and I do think it's coming before the end of this season, I think that we'll go back and look at all these little moments, whether it's Ted giving Nate the whistle that's an indoor whistle that doesn't whistle, or Keely saying coffee's for closers only, or, you know, whatever it is. All these things are what has led him to the time. And look, like, it shows. Like, he explodes. We've gone over this. Like, this is just who Nate is. That's where we are with Nate. And he can't even be bothered to get on board with the whole team. Like, other people are sacrificing a lot to do it, and he won't sacrifice even a little. And it speaks to where Nate is. You're right. He's in his own head. He loves himself. Even though he hates himself.
Yeah. I think, I mean, a lot of that kind of vibe, I think, is born from that. Just like beyond Ted Lasso, too. Free kicks. What are we missing? What have we not talked about for this episode that feels like a big miss if we close out without knocking down?
I don't know about big misses, but the Beard and Jane stuff was a funny through line that was running here in the background.
Yeah.
You didn't like it?
Nah, still not my favorite. And like, also, like, why would he like turn it off for the eulogy? You would think that if like Jane is like, oh, I love funerals.
Oh yeah, I
like,
want to get off on this for sure.
Yeah, she would want to hear. She would want those raw tears.
I like that he turned it off because he has respect for Rebecca. Like, yes. Beard on some level is like, you know what, Jane, I will hold up your cell phone through the liturgy, through like, I'll show you around the church. I'll do all this stuff. I might even like, there was a passing moment where I thought Beard was going to try to sneak a look inside the casket and have Jane see it. Because Beard says, I like to see it, or like, I like to see, that's what he says. It's like, Jesus Christ, like the only people in the world, of course, like this is what they want. So I appreciated that I appreciated more than anything. I appreciated that Beard and Jane wasn't just dropped after last episode, that it was at least present in this episode. I at least appreciated that on some level we had that. Beard also gave Rebecca finger guns when the whole team got off the bus, which I thought was very, very funny. Like, just, I don't have anything nice to say to you. I'm not going to acknowledge your pain. I'm just going to finger gun you. She's going to do it back, and it would work. That was a very Beard-esque moment to me. So that was good. What about Ted's story? We didn't talk about the real details of the therapy. I thought it was a really nice moment, how Dr. Fieldstone made Ted remember what a good dad his dad was with the Johnny Tremaine story. Great performance by Sudeikis in that moment. That was one we didn't pull away from. We didn't have to cut that pain because there was that was connected to a lot of love and a lot of emotion. So I really liked the therapy scene just overall. Like, it really felt good to me. Ted got triggered, I think, by seeing Henry and maybe to a lesser extent with the picture of Nate there. But Ted got triggered, I think, in that moment because thinking about fathers and it wasn't even necessarily the funeral that did it. It was just thinking about being a good dad and, you know, not lost on me. I can't remember if we've talked about this or not, but There's a lot of meta stuff with Sudeikis and Ted Lasso that,
yeah, for sure.
I don't know how meta, but I mean, Sudeikis is away from his kids and they're young kids for
making
six
the show. Yeah.
To 9 months of the year making the show. He's in the UK and they'll pop over for a visit or two, but like, I don't know, man. Like, it's hard for me to think about like Ted, the character, having some guilt over Henry without thinking about Jason Sudeikis, the actor, having some guilt about his kids. And that makes me feel like, should I even be enjoying the show? Like, it makes me feel kind of gross on some level. I don't know. Like, that's really difficult for me to process. But I thought they did a great job of
getting to that. Well, I think, like, in terms of that stuff, like, I think, there's, you know, speculate however much, like, you need to for, like, your interpretation. But, like, there's, for me, certainly, like, there's, like, a certain level of, like, I'm just not personally good to go there, like, in a huge way. But beyond that, I think, like, if this is, like, look, art is designed to be an exorcism in a lot of ways, right? Like, as the artist, as
get something out.
As the creator, you're, like, trying to, like, Something is living inside of you, whether it's a symbiotic relationship or a parasitic one. There is something happening.
Something malignant is happening.
There is something growing within you that you could tell people about, but they'll never really know. You know, yeah. Like, you can tell them about what this thing is, but they just, they may get it to a certain extent, but they'll never see it the way that you see it. They'll never, you know, breathe with it the way that it breathes.
It's like
with you.
Pain in that way.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, like the exercise of art is about, to some extent, unburdening yourself. And then, like, if that comes out in a way that hits people and sinks in with people in the way that it has sunk in with you, even like a sliver of that feeling, the way that you feel it internally. Like, I think that that is art working. And I think that that is the creative process. And whether it's like you see what's happening with Ted Lasso and you map that onto Jason Sudeikis's life, or you see what's happening with Ted Lasso and now you're mapping it onto your own. You know, like, that is art in motion. So, like, I'm not uncomfortable with what are the parallels between this and Sudeikis's life necessarily, insofar as, like, I'm at peace with it as it functions as a piece of art. Like, that is the purpose of this journey.
I understand that, and I think that's exceptionally eloquent, and it's a great way to put it. But I want to point out that part of why I'm uncomfortable about that, and I guess as long as Jason Sudeikis feels like Jason Sudeikis has control of this situation, then we're in good shape. It's always been, Ted Lasso is a 3-season arc, and it's up to Jason if we make more. Even everyone from Bill Lawrence, Brendan Hunt, like all the creative people involved in the show, all the co-creators, I haven't heard Joe Kelly on it, but I'm sure he's there, have said, it's up to Jason. Like, it's up to Jason. And it makes me feel like where we're at with this is that Jason Sudeikis doesn't know if he's done processing this yet, like if he's done getting this out there. And I don't know. It's on some way, I feel like creating the show itself is creating the negative energy that he's getting out there and processing in terms of being away from his kids. Like, he doesn't have to be away from his kids. Now, granted, he may be contextualizing the energy he feels when he makes anything creative, when he goes away to a film shoot for 3 months or 6 months. There's a great song by Sturgill Simpson, one of my favorite musical artists. That's the first song on his Sailor's Guide to Earth, Sailor's Guide to Life album, that is very much about this, about Sturgill processing his feelings about leaving his newborn child and going on the road and playing music and coming back. And every time he's come back, the kid's bigger, he's grown. And it's like, it really breaks his heart. Like, how is he doing this? And it's like, but I have to go out here and play this music. I got to get it out. I got to share this with people. I got to provide for you. And I'm sure that's where Jason Sudeikis as a creative person is feeling, but I don't want him to feel pressured to make more of this show just because it does so much for so many. It says a lot to me that we haven't said yet that Ted Lasso is definitely ending after season 3. More like, well, that was the plan, but we're not sure if that's what's going to happen. So it feels like he's still very much in the middle of all that. And I feel like because he's in the middle of it, I can feel his probably pain and confusion and vulnerability and all these things a little bit more as a result. And that's why it feels a little bit trickier for me in those moments to see it. And the whole enterprise is just emotionally, it hits me. I mean, one of the things that I think resonated the most with me, maybe about any piece of creative media that we've done or talked about in a long time, but especially in this one, is where Ted says, like, part of the reason why the stuff that happened with his dad, and he wished that he would have told him, Ted says, I'm never going to let anybody get by me without understanding that they might be hurting inside, because life is hard. Life is really hard.
Yeah.
And like, to me, that is like a mantra of compassion, and one that is like so specific in terms of understanding compassion and empathy, which are like my guiding principles when I'm at my best, and why they matter so much to me, and why I love the David Foster Wallace, This Is Water, like, which is also very much about that, about choosing a compassionate or empathetic life. Like, this is Ted's choice. And so my empathy makes it hard for me to shut down and when it comes to Jason Sudeikis' role in creating the show. Like, every moment I enjoy Ted Lasso, every moment we spend talking about watching Ted Lasso's pain and how great Jason Sudeikis was at capturing it, I cannot unlink from feeling that Jason Sudeikis is going through some shit right now, man. And like some of that's him wearing the sweatshirt and giving the speech at the Golden Globes. And some of it's knowing that this is a very painful time in his life with his relationship ending. Like character and actor are life and art are imitating each other repeatedly back and forth. So it just feels a lot more loaded for me. And this episode really drew that out in a way that maybe some of the other ones don't. That Ted talking about, you know, feeling like his dad was working all the time and his dad feeling some type of way, you know, and his dad doing what he did. It's like all these things are really wrapped up in Jason Sudeikis. And it's like, yes, I completely agree with you.
Am I blanking? Did they say what his dad did?
Shot himself. Ted heard bang.
No, sorry. I don't mean it like that. I mean, occupationally. Do we know anything about his work?
We don't know. We don't know. We don't know. He was a soccer coach who moved to England. That's all we know.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. No, we don't know. We don't know. And, you know, not for nothing. We don't know. He said he was a good dad, but we also don't know the ways in which he wasn't besides what ultimately happened. Other than he was working with his friends all the time. But as I said, they were at the bar every Sunday all day long, from the time he was like a young kid till the time he was 16. And it sounds like his mom was working. So I don't know what his dad was doing, but it doesn't sound like his dad was the healthiest person either, regardless of that. So I don't know. I don't know where that's at, but it's hard for me. That part is hard for me for sure. And that's the part where it's like, when I think about it, it just is, it gets me in a different headspace in terms of thinking about why people make things and what they sacrifice to make them for us. And especially in these times where they're going through all the COVID protocols and they're living their lives a very particular way in order to produce these things for us. And it's like, you know, I'm reminded, Josh, of the Bo Burnham track from Inside that I know you love so much about making some content. Like, it's like, Jason, I don't want Jason Sudeikis to feel like he has to make this for us. I love what you said about art being the exercise, like of creating it and getting this thing out there and sharing your pain or sharing your, you know, your power or whatever it is. But
I think it's like, you got to get it. Like the only way to get out from under it is to like offload it onto someone else almost, right?
Yeah. You know? Offload it onto all of us by making us care about Ted Lasso and Ted leaving his family behind and all of that. So,
but it's an invitation too, you know, like I think it's like, I think that there's power and I think that there is healing in like, I'm in pain, this is what I'm going through, or like, I'm thinking about this and I want you to know I'm thinking about it. Like, I think like there is like a line between oversharing and sharing. I don't feel like the show has overshared in that regard.
No, I think the show has definitely not. My concern is like the real life realities of the show are, whether the show shares them or not, are not something that I'm like ignorant to. So the show doesn't even need to share them for the show sharing what it does to hit me the way that it does. And, you know, like I said, all power to Jason Sudeikis. Like he has been awarded and rewarded for his art, for sharing this in the way that he has. He will continue to be. I firmly believe that. So that's a thing. Like that's a thing. Somebody said, I don't remember where I saw this. So I apologize if it was somebody that I could credit and have just forgotten. But somebody said, like, is Ted Lasso really just a thing where we all collectively need therapy so bad and we're all going through therapy at the same time? Like, there's some of that happening for sure. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Everybody needs a Dr. Sharon is my fervent belief.
Yeah, everybody needs a Ted Lasso too. You know, everybody needs a Ted Lasso.
Who believes in you? You know, like you need to find that because they're out there for sure. No doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's like it's a very meaty episode of a meaty show that I think is going to give you a lot to think about. And I think, like, you know, having I think this episode be like one of the ones that gets you thinking a little bit about the external as well as like the in-universe stuff makes sense to me.
Another way I want to hit really quickly before we leave that is right in line with that. That is meta to the point of difficult to take in when you really start to think about it. The last song of the episode, the needle drop that takes our credits out, is I Remember by the artist Molly Drake. Molly Drake may not be as well known to some people as her son, Nick Drake. Nick Drake, whose work has popped up, I think, probably most prominently to most people pop culturally in Wes Anderson films, but he has this haunting, emotional voice, and it's made all the more haunting and emotional by learning that he took his own life. That was the end for his pain and getting his art out there and getting his The exercise of that, you couldn't help but feel the pain in it and understand the emotion in it. That was the power of Nick Drake's work. Molly Drake is his mother, and this song, I Remember, is just inextricably linked in my mind to Nick Drake, and knowing that the artist gives of themselves, sometimes to a point where they can't give anymore. And so it's in a meta way, very connected to this discussion. The fact that the end song of this episode is I Remember by Molly Drake, you just cannot unlink that from what you know about Nick Drake and what you know about his work and what you know about Molly Drake, who herself was obviously a poet, a musician, all the things that she did and created in her life. Those two things are just so linked, and I think not in a, maybe not in an accidental way to what went on in this story. Just really good. And then I guess to take it away from a non, to take the darkness out of this a moment, we probably the most clever joke in the whole episode, maybe in the whole season, was when Rebecca is talking to Sam about why he's so wonderful and all the ways that he's helped her. And by the way, I've been waiting to do this all day. When he pulls her into a closet, he doesn't kiss her, he hugs her. Like,
Significant
and so important, right? Like, so valuable.
He only gets more wonderful, such that a character Sam Abyssinia.
Yes, but, and then this is the joke, I hate big butts and I cannot lie. So funny, so hilarious that he said that. Like, just a really very clever, hilarious joke. So I did not want to let the podcast end.
Do want to just like take a minute to like shout out, like in terms of like the way that these characters support each other on the show, and like the way that this show always tries, I feel like more often than not anyway, leaning into like the ultimate landing points are like people supporting people, is that like rather than, because like a lesser show does the arc where like Nora discovers that Rebecca is sleeping with her childhood crush.
Yes.
And she's bitter about it and jealous. And instead, Nora's just like, boss ass bitch.
Yes.
Really great.
I completely agree with you. And I think very valid for people to be concerned that that would happen. But this is, Nora is Sassy's daughter, Josh. Like, even though she can't climb up the beanstalk and get into the second story window as easily as her mom.
So funny.
She is Sassy's daughter. Yeah. So at the end of the day, like, she is Sassy's daughter. That's all I can really say about that.
Yeah, 100%. All right.
One final thing I want to note. Just me, when Beard was the wingman, when Sassy walks over to Ted at the wake, and Beard walks away with this older guy and says, me and Bill were just going to go over here to talk about 1966. Beard did not just pick a random year. 1966, the year that England won the World Cup and hosted the World Cup. The last time I think they made, or they won a final of any international championship since 1966. This summer, they lost to my beloved Italian national team, but the 1966 World Cup lives on in England lore, and that is for sure what Beard wanted to talk about with that guy. Was
do you think under the guise that he was a professor from Oxford still?
I did not hear the accent, the pitch perfect Irish accent. Yeah. Then where would I be? You know, sad and alone. I didn't hear the accent. So, no, not under that guise.
Yeah.
Other than that, yes.
I missed 1966
World Cup. I missed that guise too. I hope we meet the professor again.
Yeah, me as well. Can you believe there's two episodes left in season two?
I can on some level. I can believe it. But on the other hand, two episodes left of the podcast. We'll do more, hopefully, beyond the two.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, we're going to do the next two. We will at least do a wrap-up show as far as what's next for the podcast. But next week, we're going on the midnight train to Royston.
Midnight train to Royston. Yeah, that's the name of the episode. I tell you what, Apple has like very little chill. Maybe they'll learn about this. They have so little chill about like showing you stuff about the next episode. Like, they, when you log into Apple TV, if you've watched the last episode, what you see is not like an image of the show. Sometimes you'll just see the next episode, like the teaser, like the big picture and like the little description. And so like, if you try to get unspoiled on even that, you're going to have a hard time, because it's very clear what this is about. And I don't know. I don't know how much you want to get into what the description said, but that's the next episode.
Midnight, I don't know it. I don't want to know. So I think this is a good warning of just like, be careful. Yeah. You know, Apple is still figuring out television.
They really are. This one was released at 9 o'clock instead of midnight on a Thursday night.
Like, broke their own protocol with just like the word of mouth of a tweet, which isn't like the end of the world for like a streaming thing, I think. But like at the same time, I think it's just like it's indicative of like they're still figuring this stuff out. I'll say did you check out any Foundation? The Isaac Asimov show, based on the books.
Nope.
It's up on Apple TV Plus. I checked out the first two that they posted.
Just to get a base?
Wild Ride, like visually splendiferous. Watched it on my laptop just as Denis Villeneuve wants me to.
I don't think that's how you say his name.
I don't think so either.
Say his name?
But Foundation's there, like, if you're looking for a good sci-fi rec right
now.
Is
he involved in this show, or are you just mocking the Dune?
I'm just mocking the Dune.
Yeah, he and Chris Nolan are fast friends in that regard.
Yeah, I get it. So just mocking the Dune. Can't wait to Dune the Dune, by the way. I'm really looking forward to Dune. Coming out really, really soon.
Dune will be soon.
Next month. So that'll be fun. I love the book, so. I'm very interested to see how they do half
I just
of that
read
book
the book
as a
this
movie.
Summer.
Did you finish it?
I did finish
okay,
it.
Okay, cool. Good to know. Yeah, I'm excited about that. But Foundation was pretty cool. It's got your boy Jared Harris. It's on Apple. If you're looking for a thing, you can check that out. Anything else from Ted Lasso this week?
I feel good. I feel like I got everything out this time. Yeah. I feel like I exercised the demons.
You got to. All right. You can now go back into your comfy shoes. Put your comfy shoes
I've been
back
wearing them
on.
The whole time.
I know, me too.
My comfy Adidas. Shoes are bare feet. I put
I got
socks
my,
on.
My Adidas. I've been wearing those.
Adidas. That's slides? Are they slides?
They're my slides.
I got some Adidas slides, too.
I got my slides on. They're very cushy. They have like a very cushy vibe.
Well, I got the kind that feels like you're stepping on a bed of nails.
Oh, that's probably worse.
I don't know.
Than what I have.
6-1.
I guess that's true. Follow this guy at AC Mazzaro on Twitter. How many Z's? How many R's?
The amount of episodes left in the season of Ted Lasso and the amount of episodes we podcasted about for this episode.
For today. So that is going to be 2-1. I'm at Round Howard. Join us in the Discord, Post Show Recaps Patreon program celebrating its first birthday on October 1st. 1 year of the Post Show Recaps Patreon program. We want you to come hang out with us and celebrate. It's going to be a great month of fun and games.
Let me just say, I'm going to interrupt you by saying, I know you don't love like shilling all this stuff.
I hate it.
I think
I
this does not. I mean,
I have to do it though.
I want to make clear that I benefit nothing financially from the amount of patrons of Post Show Recaps, one way or the other. I think everybody, if you've enjoyed Post Show Recaps as a non-patron for a year, for any period of time, one-time birthday gift. Give Josh a $10 sub. Get in the Discord. Poke around. See what you feel. See if you like it. Just as a one-time thing to celebrate and as a thank you to Josh for all the hard work he's done, for everything they've done over the years. Look, you don't have to do anything more than 1 month. You can just do the $10. See if you like it. Poke around in the Discord. Check out some of the stuff that's in there. Message me about why you hate my Dungeons & Dragons character. Whatever it is, like, just hop in there as a thank you to Josh. That's my pitch for the Post Show Recaps patron birthday celebration. It's just to get in there, meet Wario. Just give it 1 month. If you don't, you know, if you can't afford it beyond that, I understand that completely. We've all been there in our lives at various times, and I have no disrespect or I don't want to shame anybody to feel like they got to give their last 10 bucks up to Post Show. Please do not do that.
100%.
Please
do not do that. No world in which you should do that. Absolutely
if you're in
not.
That position and you really would like to and you can't afford it, DM me on Twitter. I got you. I got you.
Oh my God, yeah. Antonio, what are you doing?
I'm not going to do thousands,
man.
But you know, for the first 10 people, if they want to get in, I'll do it. If they really cannot afford it, no shame in it. You don't have to out yourself to anybody other than me. But I mean, other than that, like I think people should just give you a thank you. I know I would if I were in that seat and I were not connected. It's just, I feel like it's a compassionate, it's a kind gesture. It's a decent thing to do. That's what I'm not trying to shame anybody, but I would urge people to check in, just to check in and say, we're out here. We like what you're doing and we're going to check out later, but we're checking in for now. We're checking in for now.
Just a quick, it's like the
we'll see you on the 2 year anniversary. Like Josh, don't take it as hate if people do bounce out.
No, I think that's great.
I'm not a $10 patron of anything. Yeah. And I respect the people that are, man. I really do. But I think the Discord is a special place, and I think people are getting a lot of value out of it. I'm really enjoying it. So I think it's worth popping in there just once. Take a look, see what you think. So
that's
I
really
would encourage people
you.
To do that.
That's really kind of you. The thing I've been saying has been just give me the chance to disappoint you. You know, like, just like give me a shot to like say, like I keep huckstering it and then they'll just come in, like relent, and then you're in there and you're like, no, ugh, not for me. It's like, that's fine. Just give me the shot. Give me the shot to like really make it clear for you that this is not for you.
Yeah. part of what makes it special is the people that it is for.
Yeah, for sure.
I just think that I'm strongly of the belief, because I know what the listener numbers are. I know what the engagement numbers are like. I know people that enjoy this stuff that we don't see in there. I strongly believe there are people that it is for. There are lots of them that just aren't in there yet. So if you listen to this, you might be one of them. And it's probably worth checking out at this point as a thank you to Josh. That's what I would say.
I really appreciate that, Antonio. I will not drone on any further about it, because I will just ruin whatever goodwill you just bought. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps is the link. It's patreon.com/postshowrecaps. We're going to be taking that midnight train to Royston in just a week from now as we get into... So closing the book on, we love to say this, the anti-penultimate episode of Ted Lasso season 2 is now in the mirror.
The anti-pen.
Yeah, we are done with that anti-pen. I love you, anti-penny. and now we are going into I love you, Penny. The penultimate itself, midnight train to Royston.
I hope the Roy part of Royston is not Roy Kent taking a train because he and Keely separate. Like, that would be brutal.
So concerned. Deeply, deeply, deeply worried. I would be lying if I said I wasn't very nervous that that is exactly what's going to be happening. But we'll find out for sure next week when we return with another episode of the Ted Lasso podcast. Until then, everybody, take care. Bye-bye.
Cheers.